throughout the normal opening hours are Monday through Friday from 11 to 6. And in this cube, during the daytime installation, all of the recordings of these activations, like the one we will be witnessing, or the three we will be witnessing today, are being recorded and then randomized and played back during the day. And I'm super excited to welcome Seth Kluwit to the office today.
I'm here at the office. And thank you for coming out on a Sunday afternoon. I figured three small gatherings across the day would make it more humane for things who have lives, so we aim for the most humane art possible, which is good. I normally don't talk very much about what I'm going to do, but I thought there's some experiment in the air around sort of what I'm trying today, and all of the things that you will hear are straight field recordings. Well, not field recordings, all field recordings, like not out in the world of field recordings, but Foley recordings of things in the studio. Recorded with a 360-degree spherical microphone. So if you hear motion, for the most part, it's happening in the real world when it was recorded, not here. I have one knob that can shift things by about 15, 20 degrees in either direction, but that's just for the, you know, the sauce. It's a little extra spice for the afternoon. There are two field recordings, one rather long one that is unedited, unlayered, unprocessed Riverside Drive in between the Hudson and the Route 9, the Henrietta Parkway. So you get street traffic, above traffic, Hudson River, waves, the dock, the bike path. So there's a lot going on. So it's going to sound like it's edited, but it's just all straight field recordings. We'll see how it all goes from there. Thanks for coming. Seth will be around.
your concern for utilizing that as your primary source of sound making?
Yeah, you know, lately I've been revisiting, you know, weirdly enough, I started out my musical life as a voice performance major at the conservatory. I was not a composer, I mean, I was a composer from when I was a kid, but grew up so rurally, I didn't have a composition professor, so I started out college as a voice performance person because that's what I could get into conservatory. And
love that.
And when I first came to New York in the late 90s and started improvising, I was doing that in the context of being a vocal improviser with other things, amplified stuff on a table, whatever. And lately I've been revisiting making sound in my own body, but for me the whistling, the whistle sound that you hear in the thing is a pair of Acme slide whistles, and I'm playing about two sides of my mouth, and I can't get the air in both of them at the same time, so it's flipping between the two tones. And so then the whistle is like, you know, we start out with these sounds that are like very close, and so the idea is like take this space and then like condense it back down to the single point where I'm the only thing making sound, and it sort of puts in contrast to the rest of the spatial situation.
You said you had a 360-degree microphone.
It's true. Yeah.
So, does it rotate or it stays stationary?
Yeah. Okay. So, so the type of surround sound that this is something called ambisonics.
Mm-hmm.
There's two. There's like Atmos, which is like Dolby, and it's like commercialized, and you have to have like a decoder that costs $10,000 in order to produce it, and there's all this thing. And then like ambisonics was started in the 70s by an encouragement of the BBC, who basically was like, how can we get four-channel sound over stereo transmission for radio? So they made a system that would allow you to, using some fancy math and phase, you can actually decode a stereophonic signal into four channels, which is nice. This microphone has four capsules in a, looks like a dice, like, or what do you call it, like a jack, you know, like playing jacks like kids did. I was young. So the jack is like this, and it's got mics in these directions, and one of the signals is omnidirectional, which is like a sphere, and then the other ones are cardioid, which is like a Y point. So like a, think about it like a panoramic versus a 50 millimeter lens on a camera, right? 50 millimeter just cuts out everything that's on this side, and that's what the cardioid signal does. And so this little mic, basically, you take the math of the 360 sphere, and you know use the cardioid patterns in the different directions to figure out where air pressure is changing in the sphere around you. So the mic sits up straight like this, and it's got the little four capsules going like that direction, and then I made sounds around that microphone. Normally, you take it out into the field, and, you know, like I did with the field recordings, but I've been playing around with Ambisonic Foley. You know, trying to do capture things in 360 rather than pan them in 360, which I've always found is a little bit artificial balance. Yeah.
How would you adjust, if you were playing in a rectangular room,
mm-hmm. How
would you adjust these mics?
Right. So the mics capture in a sphere, but when we play them back on the eight channels, what we're really doing is playing them back on four points on a sphere. So like you have a sphere and you imagine there's four points that are on the sphere. These four points are just windows that allow the sound field to pass through into the sphere. So capturing in a rectangular room sort of doesn't, it's agnostic to the shape of the room because the reflections are what the reflections are. Okay, so without getting too fancy, normal panning is like a left and a right channel, and it's like a phantom image in the middle that you hallucinate, but it's not really there. There's no stereo field. It's just if you're in the right spot, you hear, I don't know, Bob Dylan, Highway 61, or visited the pianos on the right hand side, all like that. It's like recorded on the right, it's panned all the way to the right, and that's what you get. Ambisonics and wave field synthesis, on the other hand, recreate the actual wave front. So like the particles moving in space. And so what you're doing when you are putting speakers there is providing a point through which the sound wave will come. Sounds like what you do with loudspeakers normally, but what we're really doing is capturing in a sphere and then playing back in resolutions of a sphere. So this is first order to the eight, but we could do second order, which would be 12, and we could do third order, which would be 17, and you know, up to seventh order, 64 channels is what people do with the top end of that at the moment. So
all also the height of the room would be compensated in the same way.
Yeah, because it's reflections in time and reverberation, and it's just the sound field. So if the reflections are in the sound wave, which they are because they're part of the whole gestalt experience of listening in a room, then they'll be captured by the microphone, which just listens like your head, basically. Yeah. Cool.
So
yes.
Just a follow-up. Is there a concern for bass cancellation and the representation of the ambisonic?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's our number one enemy. And for example, if that loudspeaker, if the cables were just put in backwards,
yeah.
All of a sudden your sphere would have like a Death Star style dip in one corner, and then it would throw off the dimensions of the of the ambisonic. And actually, honestly, this low number of loudspeakers is a relatively low resolution presentation. There's a system up at RPI Impact that's like 64 channels, and I went out of Bell Labs at 64 channels. And when you play sound back in that thing, you're like, oh, it's right there. And the violin, if you record a violin and you play it back on that system, it's the right size. But if I were to record the violin and it were, let's say, 15 feet away from the mic, when I replay it back on the system, the violin would sound too big, too wide. That was like too large a sound image, because it's like a Funhouse mirror. It's expanding out the sound in a weird way. Yeah.
And then capturing small versus big sounds.
Yeah.
Would you say that the size of our sphere is changing, or the size of our sphere is fixed and we're kind of...
Wait, say that again.
Like when capturing small versus big sounds. And
yeah.
Would you say that us in this room now listening to it, the size of the sphere that was capturing has changed in those situations, or the size of the sphere is fixed and we're kind of getting different distances?
That's a great question. So so the reason I started playing around with ambisonic Foley is because Foley being like the stuff that in movies, like someone like gets punched in the face and that's like a rubber glove on a stake or something like that. It's like a fake sound effect. It's like the closest thing that regular society knows about like music on credit and tape. Reproduction of things you recognize, there's like this like truthiness about it. Like it's like, oh, that's a car horn, that's a train. The train's going from left to right. I recognize that. I understand, like I have a point reference for it in the world that I try to reconcile against. So I started to play around with the ambisonic Foley with the idea that that if I listen on headphones, taking the ambisonic signal and rendering it down to binaural at two headphones, while I'm recording, what I record is what I record, and what I play back on this is what plays back on this, and it's one-to-one, and there's no expansion or contraction because I've captured it the way I want it.
And not to mention, if you're seated on one side of the room versus the other, you
might
get a different...
Yeah, there's no sweet spot. I mean, there's a little bit of a sweet spot, but what's the sweet spot? Okay, so the sounds were in order, a milk frother with a nylon, the sound at the beginning, it's a milk frother with a nylon string on it, and I'm putting the string very, very close to the microphone, so it's making a little pressure wave that's just thumping like an helicopter thing against the mic. The second sound is a handheld fan for like when you're on the subway and it's too hot, and I'm actually like moving the fan around the microphone while I record, and then like bringing it way back and like bringing it way forward, and you get space and distance. Then there was the slide whistles, and then there was a tiny bubble wrap bag wrapped around the microphone, and then there was a large piece of bubble wrap in a sphere around the microphone that I was like pulling on. And then there was some paper crunching, and then the sound of the outside, the Riverside Park, and then a gong, the inside of it, so the microphone actually on the back of a gong, and you moving the gong around. And the second sound that was like a whale was a cake pan being played by a super ball, like a rubber ball. And then more slide was. Oh, and then rubbing the back of the drumstick on the pan in circles, but moving the pan around the mic so that you're constantly getting these orbits of the sound moving around.
So that slime ball sound was the bubble wrap, right?
Yeah. Well, there's
Yeah.
You're kind of inside it, ASMRing.
Yeah.
As it goes. Yeah. Any other questions?
I think your notes mentioned something about a vase. Is that just like a
feeling? Oh, yeah, there's a vase.
sorry.
Like a clinking.
Yeah, so the Vaz was an interesting one because in order to fit the Vaz in, I had to take the windscreen off the mic. But there's some fancy electronics in this particular mic that stop a particularly bad feedback hum. And so you'll hear, hang on, I can just press play. So that hum is the feedback of the microphone, but I just tuned it to the gong. Like I played gong frequencies that lined up with it so that it didn't sound. But so then,
okay.
Now you hear that is the resonant frequency of the inside of the bass. And then this is bad recording. I mean, I would have liked to have recorded it without hitting it against the microphone, which is what the taps are. And you can also hear my fingers kind of pop away. Like my fingers were sticky because I was sweaty and I was like popping my fingers against the outside of the house. Whereas this is my favorite owl mug. I collect owl mugs, so it's a thing. Here comes. So you're like inside the owl mug. And then to your point about the bubble wrap, this is the bubble wrap. I'm not popping it, I'm just like trying to hold my hands very still. My hands won't hold still, so it's crackling, but the mic's so sensitive to every sound you hear. So.